The Andy Caldwell Show is sponsored in part by CoLab, the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business.
This is the Andy Caldwell Radio Show, keeping an eye on our politicians, our government, and our community.
I'd like to welcome you back to the show. One of the most brilliant analysts in California, he's actually across the land, but he writes a lot about California, is Ed Ring. He got an undergraduate degree in political philosophy from UC Davis, an MBA from USC. He has written on a variety of topics for all the major publications in the land, LA Times, Wall Street Journal, Forbes. I always love reading him because I learn something. He makes me think, and he looks at the big picture that we've lost focus of. In this particular case, today at the Board of Supervisors, the county handed out millions of dollars in contracts for the mentally ill, the homeless, and talked about the next plan to end homelessness. And I sent each one of them a copy of an article he wrote called The Homeless Industrial Complex. And I've asked him to share it with us today. Ed, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back. Thank you very much, Andy.
Well, you know, the first time I heard something like this, it was the military industrial complex. And I don't even remember where that originated, but it basically talked about how things can take on a life of their own.
Well, they sure can. President Eisenhower warned about the military industrial complex in 1961. He described it as special interests pooling their resources to exercise dangerous influence on America's democracy. The term's been used in various contexts, and homeless industrial complex is a term that's not original. It's been around for a while, and it's been around and come from bipartisan sources. The liberal Washington Post is the earliest citation I can find. That's back in 2012. They called it the social services industrial complex, and then the Huffington Post picked it up, Poverty Insights, a journal that, again, comes from a very liberal perspective in 2013, called it the homeless industrial complex. So it's been around a while. People are becoming more and more aware of it.
Well, another phrase that's been bandied about is cottage industry. And the bottom line here is taking on the problem of, quote-unquote, the homeless has become big business. In a myriad of ways, and you've highlighted this, but it's also become a danger to our society. And so this Dr. Drew Prinsky got national attention when he said we're going to have an outbreak of medieval diseases in L.A. this summer. He's anticipating it. We already have a bunch of them. And you highlighted the rodent-borne, flea-borne, plague, typhus, hepatitis, tuberculosis, Shigella, trench fever, and then again, like you said, the plague. And the bottom line is L.A. County is home to an estimated half of the state's homeless.
That's correct. And it's not just happening in Los Angeles. It's happening all over California, and it's happening in many of the, well, mostly in blue states. It's a big problem in Chicago. It's a big problem in New York. It's a big problem in Seattle. And they're seeing these diseases, and there's still people out there claiming that this is, you know, that we're trying to blame the homeless for disease. And really, this isn't about assigning blame. This is about what could become a very serious crisis. And the reason is because of the trash in the streets, which become habitat for rodents. And rodents carry mice and ticks and lice and fleas, and those insects carry disease. The trash explosion in L.A. is also because they created a monopoly in trash hauling a few years ago that's been a disaster. And the rates have gone up so high, some businesses have refused to pay. There's a lot of illegal dumping. That's got to get sorted out as well.
Well, and let's talk about the worst thing of all. So trash does break down. It attracts rats and mice who feed off of it. But, you know, let's talk about fecal matter that these people, they're open sewers. We've got open sewers, in essence, running down our streets now because these people are defecating on sidewalk streets and in front of buildings and things like that.
Well, that's true. And, you know, obviously they have to go somewhere. And so the city's response is to try to come up with porta potties, but they can't just put out, you know, a porta potty. How much does it cost to rent one of those things and to come in once or twice a week and clean it out? You know, they use them at festivals. They use them on construction sites. But no, for the homeless, they've got to come up with something that's such an elaborate solution that they were looking at annual costs per mobile bathroom. Now, that'd have more than one toilet in the bathroom, to be fair, but they were talking about $300,000 a year per mobile bathroom. And that's, of course, that's not going to solve the problem because they don't have enough money to do everything in such a elaborate way.
So anyway, the bottom line here is some of these diseases are already there.
Yes.
But if some of the other diseases break out, there's a chance it's not going to just be confined to these hellholes we call inner cities. And the bottom line here is one of the things you mentioned is that LA has money to deal with this because of a voter approved initiative.
There's enough money to solve this problem if it was applied in a way that wasn't, you know, everything has to be gold plated. They want to build permanent supportive housing before you're allowed to remove homeless people from the street. And the motivation behind that was, you know, you can't just shove them around. They have rights. So permanent supportive housing has turned into apartments that, on average in Los Angeles, these homeless apartments are costing over $400,000 per unit. The cheapest one I could find used a shipping container, and it cost $280,000. And, you know, I went online and looked at shipping container homes, and you can buy one, including the shipping, so they can ship it to your location. It uses three shipping containers. It's three times bigger, and it only costs $80,000. So why are they doing it in a way that's so expensive?
It's crazy. It's everything, like you said, gold-plated. It's absolutely ridiculous. Ed, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue to discuss his phenomenal piece called The Homeless Industrial Complex. Ed Ring, California Policy Center. You're listening to The Andy Caldwell Show. Stay tuned.
The Andy Caldwell Show is sponsored in part by CoLab, the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business.
Local, national, and traditional values heard right here. This is the Andy Caldwell Show.
I'd like to welcome you back to the show. My guest, Ed Ring, co-founder of the California Policy Center, a widely published and celebrated analyst. We're talking about a piece he wrote, The Homeless Industrial Complex. And let's talk about the builders. So what happens is cities collect fees from developers, and then they get matching dollars from the state and the feds, and what they're supposed to do is build homeless homes or complexes for poor people, and they're charging an arm and a leg for them.
That's right. You know, and part of this is just, you know, in California, it takes 6 years, for example, to, on average, to get a permit through and get construction completed for an apartment unit. You go to Houston, and that would take, you know, 6 weeks. So that's part of the problem, is just all of the laws here in California. But unfortunately, I think a lot of the developers, you know, and I'm not saying they look in the mirror and say they're taking advantage of this, but you can hide behind all of these laws and regulations and claim that all of these costs are unavoidable. And a lot of them are. But what has to happen is there has to be a new definition of permanent supportive housing and a new definition of shelter housing so that things can be found, things can be built that don't cost as much. And that might mean that somebody doesn't get an apartment. You know, maybe they end up in some kind of facility where there's tents or sheds. You know, you can get a nice shed at Home Depot for a 120 square foot shed for $2,500. Some of those are already insulated. You know, you could just put in electricity and have some common bathroom and kitchen facilities. I mean, this is better than living on the street.
Well, let's put this into context. On some people go, oh, that's horrific. And yet you look in China and Japan, they're building the equivalent of a shed-sized unit in a high-rise, where people literally crawl in to go to sleep. They have minimal possessions. And then let's look at a different context. And this is what drives me crazy, Ed. So Santa Barbara, we're in Santa Barbara. It's one of the most expensive areas in the entire country. I know doctors and lawyers who practice here but can't afford to live here. So if a doctor and a lawyer or a teacher or a firefighter or a cop or an engineer can't afford to live here, what moral, ethical, or economic obligation do we have to try to make room for somebody that's either a drug addict, mentally ill, both, and or somebody that doesn't even want to work or get better?
Well, you're bringing up a lot of really good points, and to go through some of that, the homeless population is really divided into three groups, and I got this from someone who's been running a successful transition shelter for a long time. There's the so-called cannots, who are mentally ill or disabled, and that's only about 15% of the homeless. Then there's the have-nots, as opposed to the cannots, and these are people who've had bad luck. These are sort of the homeless you want to help the most, but they're not as visible. They're defined as homeless, but they're doubling up in homes, or they're living in RVs, or they're figuring out some way to get off the street. And that's about half of what remains, let's say a little more than 40%. The other 40%, though, are what you would call the will-nots. They don't want to change. Most of them are drug addicts or alcoholics. And these are the ones that you see on the street. Most of the homeless that you see on the street are the so-called will-nots. And you can't have a serious conversation about the homeless if you don't care about people. You want to try to help even somebody who's fallen off the wagon or they've had a drug problem their whole life. You want to try to help them, but you're not helping if you're only able to help a small fraction of them because the solutions you've designed cost so much. It's far more compassionate to come up with solutions that don't cost as much but can help far more people.
Right, and you know, the bottom line here is, and I've always argued this, the more services we offer, the more homeless people that come here. The less we enforce our laws, including sleeping on a sidewalk or sleeping in a public park or defecating on a public street, the more of it we're going to have. And one of the things you mentioned here is, you know, some activist judge has now described their tent as private space, even though they've parked it on a public sidewalk.
That's right. And to solve this problem is not going to just require sort of coming up with better, more cost-effective solutions and rooting out some of the corruption that's involved in spending all this money we've allocated for the homeless. But the other part of the solution is changing the laws and also successfully litigating. There was a case called Jones versus the City of Los Angeles. That case ruled that law enforcement and city officials can't enforce the ban on sleeping on sidewalks unless you come up with permanent supportive housing. And what's happened ever since that ruling, which was about 10 years ago, is subsequently attorneys for the ACLU and other freelance attorneys have gone to court again and again and gotten rulings that define permanent supportive housing in ways that are more and more expensive. And there hasn't been enough effort by major cities who could afford to go to court to go back to the Ninth Circuit and get it into the U.S. Supreme Court and overturn Jones versus the City of L.A. and force some kind of clarification about what they mean by permanent supportive housing.
And, you know, the bottom line is if we have this outbreak, people are going to die. And then watch. So, you know, the bottom line is, as you mentioned here, This one they call trench fever. It got its name, if I remember correctly, from World War I.
Correct.
And here, 100 years later, trench fever is breaking out in our streets, and the plague is slated to return. How many people are going to get sick? We don't have trauma centers set up. And in fact, the other one, you had all these immigrants recently coming from the Congo. I had a doctor on the show last week that said, we don't have the medicines in America to treat Ebola.
There's a lot of things that are happening at once. You've got, you know, California is a sanctuary state. The Public Policy Research Institute of California, which is a very reputable think tank, estimates there's 2.5 million undocumented immigrants in California. At the same time, as we've passed all these laws, the Global Warming Act of 2006, SB 375, which forces all development inside of existing cities, we're making it very hard to build things at the same time as we're inviting the entire world to come be here. And that's a background problem of enormous significance. That's part of the reason we have homeless. They can't, you know, there is an argument that a lot of these folks just can't afford to find shelter in California, but it's the laws and the policies that we've enacted that have caused that.
And, you know, again, there's all these efforts, so we're going to solve this problem. And like I said, today our county board of supervisors spent a considerable amount of time talking about these efforts. And they basically say, throw a house at them, and then we can work on the other problems.
That's right, and that's one of the approaches that has to change, because you can't. It's called Housing First, and
yeah,
it was enacted in, I think, 2009 under the Obama administration, and they changed the HUD, Housing and Urban Development, rules so that if you wanted federal matching funds to help the homeless, you had to prioritize the so-called Housing First, and you couldn't set any conditions on that housing. And so what happened was the people who would be most cost-effectively helped, which are the have-nots, people who aren't addicted to drugs and alcoholics but are simply down on their luck and looking for new skills and looking for a new job, are not the people that get put into these shelters first. Because if you can find some kind of pathology, you actually get more money. You get more money from the government if you put someone in a shelter who's got an addiction. So you end up helping the people who are the hardest to help. It costs the most. And you leave behind the people who could be helped. That's the incentive, the perverse incentive that was created by that modification of the HUD rules.
The other thing that would happen is, first of all, we've talked about how much these people are costing society in a lot of different ways, including our quality of life. But they also run up hospital bills and jail bills. They go in and out of jail, in and out of hospitals. And then the other thing that would happen is, and I don't exactly understand why this spiked, but these people would be arrested and they would be determined to be incompetent to stand trial. So in other words, you know, they always say when you go in front of a court, you have to be able to understand the charges leveled against you. Well, these people were so out of their mind. The judge says they're incompetent to stand trial. We had to send them out of county at the cost of, I mean, there was a bunch of these people, millions of dollars to treat them so then they can come back and be held liable for whatever crime they committed.
It's very hard to come up with a comprehensive solution unless you bring down the cost of whatever form of incarceration or shelter. You know, those are distinct, obviously, but in both cases, we have to figure out how to bring the costs down. We have to change the laws. We have to overturn Jones versus the city of L.A. We also have to overturn Prop 47,
yep,
the so-called get-out-of-jail-free,
yep,
proposition. That's something that needs to be back on the ballot as an initiative, because it was an initiative, so it needs to be overturned by an initiative to reform that law, because you can't arrest people for public intoxication or disorderly conduct. You can arrest them, but you have to let them go almost immediately, and it downgraded property crimes, too, so that anything that's not grand larceny is just a misdemeanor now. So there's a lot of things that have happened legislatively and in the courts that have made this a big problem, and those are the two areas that need to be looked at creatively. How do we bring the costs down? How do we reform these laws?
Ed, thank you so much. Great piece. We love having you on the show. Thank you for the great work you do.
Well, thank you, Andy. You're welcome.
All right. That was Ed Ring, co-founder of the California Policy Center. Look up the article, The Homeless Industrial Complex. You're listening to The Andy Caldwell Show. Coming up next, Jim Bray, an American veteran who recently went to the celebration and the anniversary, the 75th anniversary of D-Day. We'll be back. Stay tuned.